Chapter 3. Just a couple of announcements that I want to mention. We started this chapter the last time we studied. And by the way, didn't I make a beautiful call on our Sunday night service? Wasn't that great? What we should have done is called off the morning service and had the evening service. That's what we should have done. Sunday afternoon was beautiful, though. Nothing that they said was going to happen happened. That proves that they know exactly what they're talking about. We started this chapter last Wednesday night, and I think we did like one verse. Because everybody in here was asking, or some people were asking questions that I could not answer. That's pretty much how it is now. Just y'all ask the questions and I tell you I don't know. But we started the chapter and started talking about how in this chapter you have prophetically reference made to the judgment of the nations. You have reference in this chapter or a passage that deals with the advent and battle that takes place at that time. And then the chapter ends with talking about how God is going to bless and restore the people of Israel and the land of Palestine. And of course, that'll take place out in what we refer to as the millennial reign of Christ, if our understanding of all this is correct. But we've been reading the chapters before we look at the passage, and I would like for us to do that tonight. This is just, as I said from the very beginning, to help us try to absorb as much as we possibly can from this book. And I'll start us out like I've been doing, then if somebody else would like to read, you feel free to do so. For behold, in those days and in that time, when I shall bring again the captivity of Judah and Jerusalem, I will also gather all nations and will bring them down into the valley of Jehoshaphat, and will plead with them there for my people and for my heritage, Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations and parted my land. And they have cast lots for my people and have given a boy for an harlot and sold a girl for wine that they might drink. Yea, and what have ye to do with me, O Tyre and Zidon and all the coast of Palestine? Will you render me a recompense? And if you recompense me swiftly and speedily, will I return your recompense upon your own head? Because ye have taken my silver and my gold, and have carried into your temples my goodly, pleasant things. The children also of Judah and the children of Jerusalem have ye sold unto the Grecians, that ye might remove them far from their border. Behold, I will raise them out of the place whither ye have sold them, and will return your recompense upon your own head. And I will sell your sons and your daughters into the hand of the children of Judah, and they shall sell them to the Sabaeans, to a people far off, for the Lord hath spoken it. Somebody else like to read now? Go ahead, sister. Someone else. Go ahead, brother.
people and the strength of the children of Israel. So shall you know that I am the Lord your God, dwelling in Zion, my holy mountain. Then shall Jerusalem be holy, and there shall no strangers pass through her any more. And it shall come to pass in that day that the mountains shall drop down new wine, and the hills shall flow with milk, and all the rivers of Judah shall flow with waters, and a fountain shall come forth to the house of the Lord, and shall water the valley of Shittim. Egypt shall be a desolation, and Edom shall be a desolate wilderness for the violence against the children of Judah, because they have shed innocent blood in their land. But Judah shall dwell forever in Jerusalem from generation to generation, for I will cleanse their blood that I have not cleansed, for the Lord dwelleth in Zion.
All right, thank you. Now we looked at verse 1 and talked about how it's a reference to when God is going to bring back the people of Judah who have been taken captive. That's what it means when it says, I shall bring again the captivity of Judah and Jerusalem. It's not saying that he's going to bring them back into captivity. It's saying he's going to bring them back from captivity. And I mentioned that during the tribulation, that time of Jacob's trouble, it'll be a time where once again the people are scattered from the land. And that's something that you see in the Old Testament that happened really on a regular basis with the people of Israel because of their rebellion. And again, during the tribulation, they'll be ran off the land, driven to other places, as we'll see later on. But God's going to bring them back from their captivity and restore them to the land. And God's going to judge the nations, according to verse number 2, for what they've done regarding the people of Israel. He says, I will also gather all nations and will bring them down into the valley of Jehoshaphat. And I told you last time that Jehoshaphat means Jehovah hath judged, and will plead with them there for my people and for my heritage, Israel. Notice, whom they have scattered among the nations and parted my land. See that? They've scattered them among the nations. So if this is prophetic, and obviously it is, then there's going to be a time where once again the people of Israel are scattered from their land. And also, if I'm understanding it right, notice it says, whom they have scattered among the nations and parted my land. Now what would that mean? That these nations have divided up that land of Palestine amongst themselves, right? So they've laid claim, in other words, to what is rightfully the people of Israel's. Well, you could even take it back. Who does it ultimately belong to? It's the Lord's land, but he's given the title to the people of Israel, you might say. But these nations of people are going to drive the people of Israel off of the land, and they're going to disperse the land amongst themselves and say, well, we own this part of it, and we own this part of it, and we own this part of it. They're going to try to take over possession of that land. Verse 3, and they have cast lots for my people. They've cast lots to take possession not only of the land itself, but to take possession of the people. They're going to take some of these people to be their slaves and to use to acquire things that they want to get. Because it says, and they have cast lots for my people and have given a boy for an harlot. Now you know what? You understand that, what that means? They have taken a boy, an Israelite boy, in the context, and gave him to somebody, said, I'll give you this for an harlot. They're either giving the boy to the harlot as payment or giving the boy to somebody, and then that somebody is providing a harlot for them. Somehow that's working out. That shows you just how little they care about the people of Israel. They don't care anything about them. To them, they're nothing. They're just nothing at all. And it's amazing that you could have such a hatred for somebody that you would do something like that. It's amazing that you could despise somebody and think so little of them, a human being, people that are God's people, and do something like that. But that's what they're going to do. And not only that, but notice sold a girl for wine that they might drink. They want to get drunk. We'll drink wine, so they just take this girl and say, here, I'll give you this girl, and she can be your property. You can have her, do whatever you want to with her. Just give me some wine so I can drink. That's just downright sorry. But that shows you, or it should show you, just how depraved human beings can be. I've talked about it. You're probably just sick of hearing it. But I am amazed at the humanistic society we live in today that just elevates man and brags on man, talks about how good man is. Man, so wonderful, so wonderful. And God says at his best state, he's nothing but vanity. And I'm telling you, man without God can sink to a level that you could never even fathom. And you're getting a little glimpse of it right here. Somebody that would take a human being, a boy, and give that as payment for a harlot. You got to be a depraved rascal to do something like that. And there's people in this world just like that right now. And here's something that might rattle your cage a little bit. Without God, you could do the same thing. Without the Lord in your life, I never would. Well, you're self-righteous. You really are. If you think I could never do something like that, then you're just a self-righteous person is really what you are. Because I'm telling you, without the Lord's restraining hand in your life, there is no limit to what you could do. No limit. You'd even surprise yourself. How many times you already said in your life, I never dreamed I'd do something like that. But you did it.
Yes, sir.
But you did it. See? These are some wicked folk, depraved people do something like this. Verse 4. Yea, and what have ye to do with me, O Tyre and Zidon, and all the coast of Palestine? It's the Lord talking. Implied answer is nothing. You have nothing to do with me. Notice, and all the coast of Palestine. That'd be on the borders of Palestine. These people on the borders of Palestine. These people here that have parted his land. See? They've come in and took possession of land, and he's like, what have you to do with me? They had no right there. They have no right or title to that land at all. None of those people do. The ones he's talking about here that are going to part that land amongst themselves and drive the rightful owners off of the land and then use some of them as money to barter deals with. He said, you don't have any right. You have nothing to do with me. This isn't your land. This isn't your place. These aren't your people. He says, will you render me a recompense? And if you recompense me, swiftly and speedily will I return your recompense upon your own head. We're going to see a little bit further down, just a few verses down, what he means by that. But notice how he refers to what they're doing as being against him. Or to him. Do you see that in that verse? He says, what have you to do with me? And he says, will you render me a recompense? And if you recompense me. Remember we went last time over to Matthew 25, the passage about the judgment of the nations. And he talks to him about the righteous, about how they came and they fed him when he was hungry and gave him something when he was thirsty and visited him when he was sick and so forth. And they said, when did we do all that? And he said, inasmuch as ye have done it unto the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. And then the goats was the opposite side of that. They did bad. So what he's saying there is how you've treated them is actually how you treated me. So the way you treat the people of Israel is how you treat him, right? Okay. Well, that's kind of the language here. Will you render me a recompense? And if you recompense me, In the passage, he's talking about what they've done to his people and to his land. And he says, if you recompense me, it's like you're doing this to me. And ultimately, they will be doing it to him. He says, verse 5, because ye have taken my silver and my gold. The silver and the gold belongs to him too. But now, when he says, you have taken my silver and my gold, is that a reference to some of the silver and gold that was in his house that they took in? Because he goes on to say, and have carried into your temples my goodly pleasant things. Is that what that's a reference to? That they had gone in and got some of his gold and silver vessels and taken them into their temples. Maybe that's what it's talking about, or maybe he's just talking about how they took some of the gold and silver that was in that land. Because remember, they've parted the land. That's what it says, verse 3. And he says, you parted my land. It's his land. So if there's who would own the mineral rights to it then? Know what I mean? If it's his land, then the gold and silver is his right. So maybe it's just saying you went out here and got some of my silver and my gold. You mined it and you took it in there into your temples. Maybe that's what he's talking about. Verse 6, the children also of Judah and the children of Jerusalem, look at it, have ye sold unto the Grecians that ye might remove them far from their border, just getting them off the land, don't want them around, selling them to make money, selling them to the Grecians. Behold, I will raise them, this is what God says, I will raise them out of the place whither ye have sold them, and will return your recompense upon your own head. Remember verse 4 about that recompense business? What he's saying, it seems to me, is what you did to them, my people, how you sold them, that's what I'm going to do to you. What he's saying. Because look at what he says in verse 8. And I will sell your sons and your daughters into the hand of the children of Judah. So it's going to be a reversal of how it was, right? They're selling them. So God says, I tell you what, since you want to sell them, make money off my people, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to bring them back from where you sold them, and I'm going to turn this thing around, and I'm going to sell you to them. That's what God says. God can change a situation. You know what I mean? He can completely change a situation from how it is. And that's what he's saying he's going to do. He says, and they shall sell them. So I will sell your sons and your daughters into the hand of the children of Judah. And then the children of Judah shall sell them to the Sabaeans, to a people far off, for the Lord hath spoken it. In other words, that's what I said. And since that's what I said, that's the way it's going to be. The Lord hath spoken it. Y'all know that when God says he's going to do something, he does it, right? That's right. That's right. It's an illustration of that. They're going to be treated exactly like they treated the people of Israel, the people of Judah. They're going to treat them the same way. They sold them, so they're going to get sold. That's the way it's going to be. God's spoken it. The Lord has spoken it. He said that's the way it's going to be, so that's the way it's going to be. Verse 9. Now here at verse 9, and going down through verse 18, or verse 16, rather, in the chapters, a reference to the advent and a battle that's going to take place when the Lord Jesus Christ comes back. Verse 9 says, proclaim ye this among the Gentiles. This is what you go say among the Gentiles. Prepare war. Wake up the mighty men. Let all the men of war draw near. Let them come up. Beat their plowshares into swords. Somebody in here that knows, tell me what a plowshare is. Anybody in here know what it is? Google it. Ask Siri what it is. She'll tell you what it is. A plowshare. And your pruning hooks. A pruning hook would be a hook used to prune. Right? That's kind of self-explanatory. That's the only reason I know what that is. Pruning hooks into spears. Basically what he's saying is take your equipment, your instruments that you're using to farm and to prune, and turn them into weapons of war. That's what he's saying. Irregardless of what those are, what he's saying is you go tell those among them Gentiles, you get ready to fight. Get all you mighty men, the best you got, the strongest, the best you got. And this is kind of, it seems to me like kind of being facetious with them, you know. Go out there and tell those Gentiles, get the very best you got, the mightiest of you men, and get all your farming utensils and turn them into something you can fight with, and come on to the fight. You ever seen those people that's trying to act tough, you know? You want some of me? Well, just come on, you know. Well, I mean, in a sense, I'm not trying to be irreverent or disrespectful. He's just go out there and tell them, get everything ready and just come on. Come to the valley, and we're going to see who may the best man win, see? And we know who that man is, don't we? We know who's going to win that battle, see? What is it? Brother Jimmy, you had that right, brother. Very good. Well, hey, I think he looked it up on the computer or on the internet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Beat your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am strong. There's a song that I remember people singing, and it's a Christian song, and it's reference to, you know, let weak Christians say that they're strong in the Lord is kind of the idea. And that's all right, but really in the passage here, it's not really referring to that. It's the weak among the heathen people out there. Let them say they're strong and get ready to fight. You know, don't be weak and cowardly, but get ready. Come on. You want to fight? Let's fight. It's kind of, I mean, I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but it's just sort of the way this thing is. It's just the Lord has been hearing all this mess and seeing what these people are doing to his people and to the land and acting bad and cocky and pushing people around and bullying his folks and killing his folks and all that. So he says, okay, you get the best you got and come to the valley. Just come on. And he's going to show them who's boss then. Assemble yourselves and come, all ye heathen, and gather yourselves together round about. Thither cause thy mighty ones to come down, O Lord. It almost seems like Joel is praying that. Thither cause thy mighty ones to come down, O Lord. Because the mighty ones in the context, if you keep it in the context, is a reference to all these people that are heathen folks here. And really, they would be his, wouldn't he? Wouldn't they? Seeing he's the one that created them. He's their creator. But he tells them to come down, all of them. Assemble yourselves and come, all ye heathen. These are the heathen folk. Come. Let, verse 12 again, let the heathen be wakened and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat, for there will I sit to judge all the heathen round about. He's telling them, get everything together, get your instruments, and I'm just going to go ahead and tell you right where I'm going to be. So you just come right on, right here's where I am. Just come on with the very best you got. All you mighty men and all your instruments, just come on here. I'll be waiting on you right here. Just come on. Verse 13, put ye in the sickle. That's another instrument, a farming instrument, isn't it? A sickle is it's like got a handle and then some kind of thing on it that you cut wheat and stuff like that with. Put you in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Now, this harvest right here is not a good harvest, okay? It's not like a reaping of godly folks. We're going to see a reference to this in Revelation. Come get you down, for the press is full. The fats, that's the wine fats, overflow, for their wickedness is great. This is the wickedness of the heathen. And there's fixing to be a harvest right here in the valley of Jehoshaphat. A sickle is going to be put in there. Now, let's look at a little bit of scripture on this thing. Turn over to Revelation chapter 14, first of all. Revelation 14. Revelation 14, 18. 14, 18. This is what John sees. And another angel came out from the altar which had power over fire and cried with a loud cry to him that had the sharp sickle, saying, thrust in thy sharp sickle. Saying, thrust in thy sharp sickle and gather the clusters of the vine of the earth, for her grapes are fully ripe. And the angel thrust in his sickle into the earth and gathered the vine of the earth and cast it into the great winepress of the wrath of God. Now you remember in the verse, put ye in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, get you down, for the press is full. The press is full. The winepress is what that's talking about. And this thing says here in Revelation, cast it into the great winepress of the wrath of God. What's a wine press? That's when you put the grapes in there and you smush them, right? Wine press. And grapes, you know, you squish that, it looks red, don't it? So cast it into the great wine press of the wrath of God. So this is not, this reaping here is not a good thing, okay? This is somebody experiencing the wrath of God is what this is. Look at verse 20. And the winepress was trodden without the city, and blood came out of the winepress even unto the horse bridles by the space of 1,600 furlongs. That's the passage where, and you've heard it many times before, where you've heard about when the Lord comes back, how the blood's going to flow up to the horse's bridle. Well, that's where that comes from right there. That's a lot of blood. But it said that the wine press was full, didn't it? It was full. And the fats overflow, for their wickedness is great. There's a lot of people. We're going to see in Joel, there's a lot of people there, a lot of wickedness represented there. And the Lord is going to throw them down and squish them, and blood's going to be everywhere, up to the horse's bridle. That's the way it's really going to be. Y'all understand that? Really going to be. I mean, that's not Hollywood. That's how it's really going to be. That's going to be a lot of dead people. A lot of folks dead that day. Look over at Revelation chapter 19. Revelation 19, 11, you see where the Lord is coming back here. He's got on a vesture dipped in blood. Well, I guess if he's riding on a white horse, like it says in verse number 11, and that vesture's hanging down over his legs and that blood's flowing up to the horse's bridle, that vesture would be dipped in blood, wouldn't it? I mean, just to get on it. Verse 14, and the armies which were in heaven followed him upon white horses, clothed in fine linen, white and clean. And out of his mouth goeth a sharp sword, that with it he should smite the nations. There's that thing. And he shall rule them with a rod of iron. And he treadeth the winepress of the fierceness and wrath of Almighty God. And he hath on his vesture and on his thigh name written King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Go to the book of Isaiah for just one more reference here. Isaiah chapter 63. Isaiah chapter 63. The way it looks when the Lord comes back at the Advent, it's not like he's just going to come back and just go to one place. It's going to be like a journey he's going to make. He's going to come down from heaven and go through different areas and wind up at Jerusalem, is the way it looks. Isaiah 63, verse 1. Who is this that cometh from Edom? With dyed garments from Bozrah, this that is glorious in his apparel, traveling in the greatness of his strength, I that speak in righteousness, mighty to save. Wherefore art thou red in thine apparel, in thy garments, like him that treadeth the wine fat? Like, why you got all that red on your clothes? See, you look like somebody's been treading in a wine fat, that's what he says. I have trodden the wine press alone, and of the people there was none with me, for I will tread them in mine anger and trample them in my fury, and their blood shall be sprinkled upon my garments, and I will stain all my raiment, for the day of vengeance is in mine heart, and the year of my redeemed is come. Now, if my understanding is right, that's what this thing's talking about over here, some of it in Joel 3, where he says, put ye in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe, come get you down, for the press is full, the fats overflow, for their wickedness is great. Verse 14, multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision. For the day of the Lord, there's that expression, the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. But notice, multitudes, multitudes in the valley. You say, how in the world could you have blood flowing up the horse? You could have a lot of people, that's how. And you know there's a lot of blood in one human body, just in one human body. And we're talking about thousands and thousands and thousands of people, multitudes and multitudes there in that valley. Verse 15 and 16 are very similar to what we've seen. The sun and the moon shall be darkened, and the stars shall withdraw their shining. The Lord also shall roar out of Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem, and the heavens and the earth shall shake, but the Lord will be the hope of his people and the strength of the children of Israel. He's going to protect his people, right? And destroy all these people that have been bad to his people, these wicked heathen folk. And then we'll just try to go ahead and finish this up. Verses 17 through 21 have to do, like I say, with the blessing of God on these people and on the land during the kingdom, during the millennium. So shall ye know that I am the Lord your God dwelling in Zion. The Bible says that he's going to sit upon the throne of his father David. And where would that thing be located at? In Jerusalem, right? He's dwelling in Zion, my holy mountain. Then shall Jerusalem be holy. When he gets rid of all this mess and riffraff, he's going to turn that place into what he intended for it to be. It'll be holy. Then shall Jerusalem be holy, and there shall no strangers pass through her anymore, no more. And it shall come to pass in that day that the mountain shall drop down new wine, and the hill shall flow with milk. How's that going to happen? What does that mean? Remember the land it said in the Old Testament, the promised land they went to, which is the land we're talking about right here, going to flow with milk and honey. Where's the milk come from? Is that literal milk or is he just being figurative there? Well, I know there's milk. It comes out of figs, isn't there? Don't some milky-looking stuff come out of figs? It got a lot of animals, you know, goats, cows, sheep. This is one of those things that I don't have the answer for, but I believe what it says. When it says right here that the mountain shall drop down new wine and the hill shall flow with milk, I believe that. And one day I'm going to get to see that. Could very well be. And all the rivers of Judah shall flow with waters. It's going to be dried up and parched during the tribulation. No rain for 3.5 years, but God's going to bring back the rain. Remember we saw earlier on in this book how he was going to cause the former rain and the latter rain to come down in 1 month. He's going to give them rain and restore all the rivers. And a fountain shall come forth of the house of the Lord and shall water the valley of Shittim. That says that a fountain shall come forth out of the house of the Lord. He's going to have a fountain that's going to come out. It's just going to flow water out of the house of the Lord and water this valley. Egypt shall be a desolation and Edom shall be a desolate wilderness. The land of Palestine is going to be beautiful, beautiful. But these places are going to be desolate. Why? For the violence against the children of Judah, because they have shed innocent blood in their land, because of how they treated the people of Judah, right? What it says. They shed their innocent blood. But Judah shall dwell forever, and Jerusalem from generation to generation. You know what? If that means what it says, what it means what it says, then when all this stuff comes to pass here, all these nations that have wanted to get rid of Israel and they've persecuted Israel and been against Israel, the Lord's just going to just squish them. And there's going to be a nation that's still going to stand. You can just mark it down, folks. God has said it over and over and over and over and over in the Bible, and I may not be able to explain it all, but I do understand enough to know that when it's all said and done, Israel will be there. And those people that have been against Israel will be dead and in hell in the lake of fire. That's the way that's going to be. It doesn't matter what happens to them now, what we see happen to them later, or what happens to them during the tribulation. God's going to be the hope of his people. And he's going to bring them through. And they'll be there. Verse 21, for I will cleanse their blood that I have not cleansed, that innocent blood that was shed. Verse 19. For the Lord dwelleth in Zion. The Lord's going to be right there, dwelling on this earth during the millennium, in Jerusalem, in Zion. And he's going to take care of his people. The land's going to prosper again. It's going to be a beautiful place. Amen. I'm not going to ask you if you have any questions. Seriously, though, do you have any questions? Brother Dennis will answer them for you. That's a lot of blood. That's how it can get up to the horse's bridle and just fill up. And you know where they're going to be, right? In a valley. That's right, horse blood. Going to be a bad day if you're on the losing side.